5 days a week, the school turned its children out in the morning to march up the hill to Waverley or down to the end of the town to high school. There was no school bus. Waverley was frozen midway between the one-room schoolhouse tradition of transferring responsibility to the children. We fought to fill the inkwells, clean the pen nibs, sweep the floor, serve in the lunchroom, clean the erasers, help our slower classmates in arithmetic and reading, and the specialized procedures and curriculum of the slowly dawning corporate age of schooling. While this latter style had been sold as more socially efficient, ever since 1905, the realities of town life were such that nothing passed muster at Waverley which didn't first pass muster with parents and the elders of the town. School was something you took like medicine. You did it because your mother had done it and your grandmother. It was supposed to be good for you. Nobody believed it was decisively so. Looking back, I might agree this daily exercise with neighbours suddenly transformed into grammarians, historians, and mathematicians might well have been, as mother said, good for me. One thing is certain, these part-time specialists cared a great deal about mother's opinion of what they were doing, just as she cared about theirs in regard to her parenting. The school teachers I remember are few but bear noting. Peg Hill, who spoke to me exactly the way she did to the principal, and won my heart for treating me as a peer. Miss Wibble, who taught me to sing and memorize song lyrics so ferociously that my vocabulary and dramatic repertoire increased geometrically, even if we did whisper to each other that she was reading love books at her desk as we copied the day's words. Old Miss McCulloch, who played American Patrol every single day for an entire school year on her hand-cranked phonograph. You must be vigilant, you must be diligent, American Patrol. Her expressionless face and brutally stark manner stifled any inclination to satire. If we have to have school teachers, let some of them be this kind of teacher. At Waverley I learned about principle, when Miss Hill read from Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. She read of the courageous death of Blandina the Slave, a teenage convert to Christianity, who was offered her life to repudiate her faith, and a cruel death if she refused. She refused. I learnt that all the management savvy of the most powerful empire in history couldn't overwhelm the principles of a teenage slave. Principles were a daily part of every study at Waverley. In latter days, schools replaced principles with an advanced form of pragmatism called situational ethics, whose principles were shown to be variable according to the demands of the moment. During the 1970s, forcing this study on children became an important part of a school religion. People with flexible principles reserve the right to betray their covenants. It's that simple. The misery of modern life can be graphed in the rising incidence of people who exercise the right to betray each other, whether business associates, friends, or even family. Pragmatists like to keep their options open. When you live by principles, whatever semantic ambiguity they involve you in, there are clear boundaries to what you will allow, even when nobody is watching.